The COVID-19 crisis brings unprecedented internet traffic over the NBN network, and we're doing everything we can to support Australia with access to fast, reliable broadband. Currently, every Australian internet provider can order up to 40% increased network capacity as required, at no cost. And our technicians are mobile and working with providers to troubleshoot customer issues as they arise, for as long as it's safe. For more information, visit nbn.com.au.
PureTap know how to make our water more beautiful. They're also really big on making the planet more beautiful. So, ditch the single plastics and fill your reusable water bottle with PureTap. The planet and your taste buds will thank you for it. Well, hi folks, welcome to Conversations. Back in 1985 or 1986, I bought a double album. It was called 20 Years of Glenn Shorrock. And it was one of the best albums I've ever bought or listened to. It was, and of course, it featured the music of Glenn Shorrock, a legend here in Adelaide.
You're only saying that because I'm here. As soon as I leave, so that bloke, that 20 years, God, it was...
No, it was a great album.
No, thanks, mate.
And that is Glenn Shorrock. But what amazes me, that's 35 years ago. So now do we have 55 years of Glenn Shorrock?
Yeah, I know. Glenn A. Baker put that together. And we've often talked about the next one, but for whatever reason, we just haven't done it. Well, you know, it's lovely to have a past, isn't it? And it's lovely to be with you, and it's lovely to be back in
Adelaide,
the hometown where the past began, in 1954.
It's a fascinating journey. Can we go back, because you were born in England?
Yeah, well, we've got 45 minutes, and I don't know much of it. I can't remember much of it, so I've got to spread it out a bit.
You'll be surprised. we will run out of time. Your dad was a Yorkshireman.
Yeah, he still is.
Is he still alive?
No, he's not. He was a Yorkshireman all his life. I sometimes think he's still with me. Because you're really looking at him in a way, you know. I'm a chip off the old block,
really.
And
your mum was a Cockney.
Yeah, pretty much a Cockney, just outside of London. And so when I talk to mum, I talk like that. And when I talk to dad, I put the Yorkshire accent on as well, so he can bloody understand me, you know. And Harry passed away in 2000, you know, in the millennium. He was 86. Mm-hmm. And mum is still kicking, a sprightly 97.
Goodness me, that's good for your genes. Mm. Were they musical, either of them?
Yeah, they were musical, but you wouldn't call them, they weren't in show business.
I love the story of your immigration. Mm. And when you got here, it was 42 degrees.
Yeah.
And mum turned around and went back home.
Well, she didn't turn around, but she would have done if she could have done that. No, she didn't know what she was in for. But I think mainly she missed her family. You know, she missed her mother and her two sisters. They were very close. They were my aunties, and they were a large part of my growing up in the south of England, in Kent. We got out of Finsbury Hostel, you know, on that wonderful boulevard called Grand Junction Road. Boulevard of nightmares. I remember that bloody, what was it called, that abattoir? No, the glue factory.
Oh, yes.
Halfway down, it used to waft in on a bad wind every so often.
But she did go home. She took.
Yeah, but we managed to get a rental in Salisbury North for a little while.
So she came back?
No, we moved there, and from there... She took my sister Linda and myself back to England. So in 54 we got here. In 55 we went home. Dad stayed on. And then in 55, 56 we came back out again when Mum had realised that she'd made a mistake and why split up the family. So luckily I got, as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 12-year-old boy, I got three trips on a lovely ocean liner all the way through the Suez Canal, both times.
And so when you're back here, you got you raised at Elizabeth, is it?
Yeah, well, when we got back, we were a few months, maybe. No, maybe a couple of months, a lot of weeks anyway, in Elder Park Hostel, where now stands the Adelaide Festival Theatre. Yeah.
Well, that's a bit more and, better than
and then,
Finsbury.
And then we got chucked out of there because we weren't... assisted migrants anymore. Get out, you know, you've got to find your own way. So we moved to Rowland Flat. We found two rooms in the back of a farmhouse, on a mixed farm run by the Jenke family, who also supplied grapes for Gramps and Orlando and all that lot up there. And I went to the Rowland Flat primary school, which was one classroom with seven rows, seven grades. Seven grades for seven brothers.
Well, how does the talent emerge? I mean, were you a talented...
Well, just being a ham. My father was a ham. My father could have been a great entertainer. He was always showing off. And I got it from him, you know. I'm just been a professional smart-ass all my life. I've just been blessed with a good voice. And
When did you realise you had a good voice? When did that appear?
Well, I didn't think I had a good voice for a long while because I didn't sound like Elvis Presley. I didn't sound like Little Richard, and I didn't sound like Paul Jones, and I didn't sound like Paul McCartney. But then I realised that I was trying to sound like them. So finally ended up sounding like myself. And I'm happy with my voice now. It's got a lot more character to it now. It doesn't sound like a little boy anymore.
A lot of singers I struggle when they get older with their voice. Some do, some don't. But
some do, some don't.
Yours is okay.
You know, people like Pavarotti, and I'm not putting myself in the same league as Pavarotti, but Pavarotti, Sinatra, and now Tony Bennett. You know,
Tony Bennett's
in his 80s now, and he can still sing well. And physiologically, doctors have told me that a man's voice reaches its maturity around late 50s, early 60s.
Did you ever have any training, voice training, singing lessons? Or?
No, a packet of Vicount.
Just to smoke?
No, he said confidently.
So when did the real talent emerge? When did you start performing publicly?
We just sort of drifted into it. Growing up in Elizabeth North in 1956, Elvis burst upon the scene. The whole rock and roll thing burst upon us. You remember, all of a sudden we were called teenagers. I was just swept along with that. And I tried to emulate people. Elvis was the big guy up on the wall first. But I love the Everly Brothers. I love the harmony. I just liked everything about rock and roll because it was accessible. You didn't have to be a great musician.
Can you remember the first time you performed publicly?
Yeah, but that was it wasn't really public. It was a little get-together of kids in the Lutheran church hall in Elizabeth North on a Friday night, just to keep us off the streets. You know, we'd go there and put on our records. There was 78s and then 45s, the new technology, 45 RPM. And I decided to go as Elvis and put my dad's sports jacket on, which draped nicely to the knees, the tight pants, and a cardboard guitar I cut out with strings on it, and I mimed to All Shook Up, and then it broke halfway through, and I carried on singing.
All Shook Up.
Yep, and that was first thing in the poop. All these kids, there's about 15 of them. They were all my mates anyway. And they all clapped and encouraged me.
You knew the words and you were confident enough to keep singing.
The rest of my soul, what's wrong with me? I miss you like a man on a fuzzy tree. Man says, in the wild as a bug, I'm in love. I'm all shook up.
And they went crazy.
Yeah, it's one of my favourites. I loved it. It's good fun.
Could you play guitar at all?
No, I didn't bother.
Didn't bother?
No, I just pretended.
So therefore you need the musicians behind you.
Well, I was working in the South Australian Mines Department, the old Cox Foy's, opposite the old Cox Foy's building, corner of Pulteney and Rundle. Mm-hmm. And I was a junior draftsman in the Mines Department there. And I worked alongside a guy called Peter Knobloch. And you may remember he was one of the Four Tones. And the Penny Rockets were with a de rigueur band in those days. Yes. And of course I picked up on this, and Peter said, you know, come and watch this. And I used to go and watch the Four Tones and Ray O'Connell and Doug Toll and the Penny Rockets play on the old Greek Hall.
Ray O'Connor married my wife's mother, Denise.
Wow.
So we still see him.
Yeah, okay.
He's still kicking along pretty well.
Yeah. And I used to work alongside of him, and he would bring some lyrics in, you know, that he was learning. And, of course, I knew what the songs were. Mm. And I just sang alongside of him just for the hell of it. And he said, you can sing harmony. I said, really? Can I? Well, that's good. And he said, yeah, well, one of the brothers is leaving. Why don't you audition? I said, really? He said, yeah, come along. We were auditioning on Tuesday. It was a pub up in O'Connell Street, North Adelaide. And I got the gig. I got the job. I was thrilled. Mum, I'm joining the Four Tones.
Dad,
I'm joining the Four Tones.
Who? We need to take a break. Glenn Shorrock. Look, Glenn Shorrock is in town for the Fringe. His shows are on at the German Club on, well, the first one sold out, but the one on February the 22nd at 8 p.m. is definitely still available for tickets. It's 60 years of his music, and we're going to cover it over the next 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah, cool.
Glenn Shorrock, my guest. Back shortly, folks. Welcome back, folks. Thank you for joining us. Glenn Shorrock is my guest today. I said that he's performing at the German Club on February the 22nd, but that's sold out.
Yeah, so we've added the 23rd on the Friday night. Yeah.
Okay, Saturday 22nd sold out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that at the German Club. It's a new venue for me.
Well, it's an intimate venue. You'll really enjoy it because the crowd.
No, everybody I know has played it, so it's terrific.
Quite involved. So who plays behind you when you perform here?
I've got a bunch of all sorts. A few surprises will be joining me on stage.
So they just know they know your music and you sing. But
Rob Pippin has organised the band, and I know most of them. Polly, I've known Polly for years. Mm. And I'm having a few old mates come and join me as well. So,
well, tell us about the old mates.
Well, when I took the Four Tones,
mm-hmm.
I started rehearsing with them, and then all of a sudden the guy that left comes back. He wants to rejoin again. So I'm left with all this ambition and enthusiasm. And so I called up my mates who I knocked around with, called them up. We didn't have a phone. we actually had Volkswagens. We were going opposite each other. We both pulled over. I went out the thing. And Mike said, how are you going with the Four Tones? I said, they've sacked me already. I haven't done anything. And I said, why don't we do our own thing? And the Twilights were born. Paddy, my other mate, and we...
Paddy McCartney.
And we found a bass singer because we thought we needed a bass singer.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Volrat. He was a big Dutch bloke. And unfortunately, he got arrested for... receiving stolen goods, as it were, in those days. So we carried on as a trio, and the trio was the Twilights. And then we met the Vector Men, a local band in Elizabeth, and then the Hurricanes with John Perry, John Bywaters, Peter Brightoak, and Kevin Peake, whose place was taken by Terry Britton. And that morphed into the six-piece band. Mike Sykes dropped out. Paddy and I became the two lead singers, and as they say...
I can be self-indulgent. I was living in Whyalla in 1966, and you...
Oh, you weren't, were you?
I was.
You poor chap.
And one of the first concerts I ever saw, one of the first live groups I ever saw, were the Twilights at the Whyalla Institute.
Yeah.
And I thought you guys were...
Yeah, it was...
So glamorous and
glamorous.
Well, okay. You had the... But yeah, was the long hair was just starting to come in, the trendy modish clothes were coming in.
That's right. Yeah, we picked up on all those things pretty quickly because growing up in Elizabeth, you're constantly being refreshed by new people coming in, new migrants, and they were bringing the new Winkle Pickers or the new album by Snotty and the Nose Pickers or whatever. and we just had a lot of impetus, and we absorbed it quickly. And we were just a bunch of lucky friends that were good musicians that could mimic that could reproduce what they heard on the radio pretty good, pretty well in a live situation. And we proved that around Adelaide for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, what you did was you flamed so brightly because there was the national band competition, Hoadley's.
Oh, there was the Beatles. There was the Beatles competition first, and we won that. That was just the three of us. We did Please Mr. Postman, I think. Yeah, I think we did that.
Like a fella.
No, with the Vector Men, Frank Tarney and Nolan Tarney and those guys from Elizabeth. I got photographs of that. We looked pretty stupid because, you know, we tried to comb your hair forwards, but it kept curling up the front. It looked more like Judy Garland than John Lennon. And then later on, yes, we did do the Hoadley's Battle of the Sounds. But, you know, we were in competition with guys like the Viscounts and the Clefs and Bobby Brighton, the Bowman, and a band called Trev and the Moccasins, who sort of concentrated on Gene Vincent covers. And in those days, sort of every group had their own sort of leaning towards a certain other group. Well, ours, of course, was the Beatles. But then, you know, when the Beatles really invaded the musical scene, everybody just got caught up in it, didn't they? They changed everything. They have changed everything.
But you've won this battle of you're recognised as the best band in Australia. So what does it mean in terms of contracts and performances and recording? And we all know, you know, the Needle in the Haystack, which wasn't an original song of yours.
No, it wasn't. But our original material hadn't progressed far enough at that stage. Terry was writing most of it.
Terry Britton.
Yeah, I wrote the first song that we did here at Visard Studios in Hindley Street. That was called I Don't Know Where the Wind Will Blow Me. It's kind of prophetic. And that got to about number 10 on the local charts. And then we recorded If She Finds Out, which was a Terry Britton, Peter Brydock composition. We did Bad Boy, a cover of a cover, like the Beatles did a Larry Williams song, and then we did the Beatles version of it. And then Needle in the Haystack came along, and we'd already left Adelaide by then. We'd been seduced to Melbourne by a guy called Gary Spry. Therein lies a story, too. That was strange.
Tell us.
Well, we had the Oxford Club on King William Street. It wasn't a club, you know, it was just you paid your 50 cents and you went in. But you got a little medallion that said you were in the Oxford Club. 50 cents, that's good. And it was 50 cents at the old Caledonian Hall in King William Street. And every now and again there was an interstate group would come along or somebody would get up and do a turn, Brian Penglaze or somebody like that. Well, this time we heard that there was the Melbourne group, the Melbourne Beatles, called the Flies, right? And we laughed. They called themselves the Flies. Oh, how could you? And they were billed as Melbourne's Beatles. And they turned up backstage in the back door, and as rumour had it, they heard Beatles music. And they thought, oh, we'll go down well here. You know, they're playing Beatles records. And then they looked around, and they saw the Twilights singing Beatles records live, and they panicked, they shut themselves and went home.
Oh, okay.
Not quite. Then their manager, Gary Spry, took us to Melbourne.
And were you one of these early bands of the 60s that got shafted by their management and the money disappeared? Or
no, not really. You'd have to ask John Bywood, you know, about those sort of things. John was more in tune with what was going on behind the scenes, as it were.
John Bywood was your bass player.
Yeah, John the bass player.
More renowned, really, as the bass player for the 5AA Rock and Roll All-Stars.
Yeah, well, you played with him.
In later years, but
that's right.
That was supposed to be a joke.
Oh, was it? I'm laughing now. Laughing at the fact that it was supposed to be a joke. I didn't take too much notice of the business side of things. I was a front man. Mm. I was having too much of a good time.
What was it like? I mean, in terms of...
Oh, it was great, man. I had a little red sports car. I had a little Triumph TR3. And, you know, we were the best band in Adelaide. And,
well, best band in Australia, probably.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. But we certainly had a... We carved a niche for us. The Easy Beats, I think their records put them in front of the Twilights. The Twilights didn't make... They made a good records, but the Easy Beats made great records. You know, they're really exciting records.
You went to London, though, didn't you? One of the prizes was going... Was
Hoadley's National Battle of the Sounds, yeah.
Was that good or bad?
It was great. It was lovely.
Well, sometimes it's the forerunner of bands breaking up, though.
It put a strain on us, I guess. You know, John was newly married, and we all had relationships back here. But the main thing was we were popular here. You know, we had a big following. We were successful. In England, we weren't. We were stuck in a freezing cold basement in Earl's Court, eating jam and bread for Christmas dinner. It wasn't good fun, but it was a great experience. You know, we got to record alongside the Beatles in Abbey Road.
We'll talk about that briefly when we come back. Glenn Shorrock is my guest today, folks. He'll be back in town for his show at the German Club on February the 23rd.
Yep.
The 22nd is sold out. So if you want to hear his 60 years of music, and
60?
That's what they've written here.
Really? God, I must have been 4 when I started.
Back shortly, folks.
Would I get old? I'm losing my hair many years from now.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations. Glenn Shorrock. And I use the word legendary. I know I throw it around all the time, but of course he is.
Stick around long enough, you become a legend.
Well, you are.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I'm a bit frightened of becoming an icon.
An icon?
That means you're dead. Or a statue. Or something.
At Caltex Star Mart and the Foodery, get all your essentials at your convenience safely, with increased cleaning and distancing measures now in place. That means you can shop quickly and safely in-store for things like bread, pasta, milk and toilet paper with none of the crowds. We're open from early morning until late, so you can come in at a time that works for you. Head to Caltex Star Mart and the Foodery and get all your essentials at your convenience. Product availability may vary by store while stocks last.
The COVID-19 crisis brings unprecedented internet traffic over the NBN network, and we're doing everything we can to support Australia with access to fast, reliable broadband. Currently, every Australian internet provider can order up to 40% increased network capacity as required, at no cost. And our technicians are mobile and working with providers to troubleshoot customer issues as they arise, for as long as it's safe. For more information, visit nbn.com.au.
Okay, time for a quick PuraTap break. PuraTap. They make our water more beautiful, and they're big on making the planet more beautiful by encouraging the use of reusable water bottles. It's a war on waste, thanks to PuraTap. Started with, you went out the last break singing Will You Still Love Me, Will You Still Need Me, when I'm 64. Well, you well and truly passed that.
Well and truly passed it. I turned 74 this year, I will do. And I'm still feeling fit and good and enjoying my life. I don't try as hard as I used to. Well, I do try, but yeah. I'm not clawing my way back up the...
Do you generally enjoy it? Or is it
I generally enjoy the life on stage.
Does it become...
Singing. I love singing. I love working with some great musicians in Australia these days. And life's good. You know, I don't have to prove much.
What happened?
I've got some tricks up my sleeve before I go.
Have you?
I've nearly finished the book. Oh. That'll come out a little later in the year, around about May.
No Holds Barred, the book.
No, I'm not telling everybody. God, I'll get arrested again.
Again?
Oh yeah. Oh, you haven't heard about my prison record?
No.
I got thrown out of Yatla for bad behaviour.
No, can't say something like that. You can't say something like that unless you've never been arrested, have you?
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
So the Twilights broke up, didn't they?
Yep.
Was it sad or was it everyone just went their own way?
I was shattered. No, I was. What, we've broken up?
How did that happen?
Well, how did it happen?
We were a close bunch of guys, you know. We had a bond, a real strong bond. And one of the unwritten laws was if one of us leave, we all leave, which is a ridiculous thing to say. Mm. It was meant to stay together. And then when the time came when we were due to go back to England, having not had any success, this time having given it another go, Laurie Pryor, our drummer, who'd been in England with John Broom and the Handles prior to the Twilights.
John Broom and the Handles,
wonderful name, isn't it? He decided, no, I don't want to go again. I'm leaving. And we just went, what? Laurie, you can't leave. And then Terry said, oh, well, if he's leaving, I'm leaving. And it just went like that, a domino effect, and all of a sudden we didn't have a band anymore. And I sort of went, well, what am I going to do now?
What did you do now?
Oh, I was a manager for a while for the Brisbane Avengers, and I was an agent with Gary Spry, the old Twilight's manager, a place called AMBO, Australian Management and Booking Organisation in Melbourne. I used to go and I booked the Master's Apprentices and the Loved Ones and...
But you're a singer.
Yeah, I know. And I used to go to the gigs with this band called the Avengers. They were from Brisbane, and they would go on, and I would just sort of go. I had to stop myself going on with them. I didn't like that too much.
I think so, and then
Brian came along.
Brian?
Cad.
Oh, with Axiom.
Yeah.
The super group.
Yeah. I said, Brian, have you got any songs? He said, I've got Arkansas Grass.
I love that song.
I said, I know, but have you got any songs? So we had a meeting in the back seat of the Simca, and Axiom was formed. I'll tell you more about it in the book.
Well, tell us now.
We pinched Chris Stockley from the Camp Act. I mean, really, he was rescued from the Camp Act. And Doug Lavery from the Valentines, drummer from the Valentines. And, of course, Don and Brian were in the group, and me, and we formed Axiom, largely because of we were very influenced by what was coming out of America again, you know, the band especially.
Mm. Did you start writing then, your own stuff?
I'd quit writing for a while because Terry in the Twilight sort of was much better than I was. And then, of course, Brian and Don had written some great songs. Woman, You Are Breaking Me in Such a Lovely Way. Mm-hmm. They were good hits. And off we went to England. And then I started writing during that period. The Axiom broke up very quickly. Don Moody got sick. He couldn't handle the English weather. I stayed on and lived there for about 4 or 5 years. Terry and I, you know, we hung out together. And Alan Tani and
Terry
Briggs'
name comes up. Always. A lot doesn't because of the Twilights, but
yeah.
People would know that, or may not know, but he achieved great fame, didn't he, working with Cliff Richard and Tina Turner and writing some great songs. So.
Yes, he's made a name for himself internationally from England, you know, from living in England. He comes out every now and again, and I see him if he's in the right mood to see me again. He's a tricky little bugger. I love him dearly. You know, he's a great talent, and he was the spirit, I think, in the Twilight. He was certainly one of the most talented.
You certainly have it, but it's often on the charisma of the front man, though.
Yeah, it's always down to the front man, I think. I've learnt that the hard way. People have learnt that as well, you know, the fact that I was no longer required in Little River Band after selling all those records.
Well, we replaced
by Farnham.
You were replaced.
Well, he was there and I wasn't. That's replacement, isn't it?
Well, I got the impression you left.
No, I was pushed out.
Let's go back. So Axiom and some great songs, but it broke up pretty quickly by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and I hung in England for about 5 years. And I joined a ridiculous band called Esperanto, which was a 12-piece rock orchestra.
Well, ELO had
ELO were at the same time.
Template for that.
Which was another problem.
What was another? There's a band, reading about you recently, you had a band called Johnny Escargo and the...
No, that was just a record I put out. André Lescargo and the Society Syncopators. And I sing in a French accent.
So it was just a fun thing.
In the ghetto, d'arrivée du med. No. Yeah, it was just a novelty record that I did for MAM Records. I got a contract with them because I was writing early songs like Statue of Liberty and Emma. And
that song had been written before?
Before LRB, yeah.
Before Little River Band.
And Help Me Sometimes If I Had Written. I'd been demoing these songs with Terry Britton and Alan Tani and Spencer and Kevin Peake, you know, all Adelaide boys.
And no interest in those songs. Great songs until...
Yeah, well, I didn't push them. I didn't get the chance to get them out. And I, at that stage, I joined this Esperanto thing, which was a bit of a mistake, but it was a good experience. In life, I think the mistakes are good for you as well as a...
Sounds like you've had a few disappointments, though, along the way, for someone who's so charismatic and successful and talented. Yeah,
I've had lots of success, though, to make up for it.
Well,
as I say, I know, looking back on it now, those times, they made me what I am, really.
Little River Band, we'll take a break shortly, but how did that... Because probably your finest hours, I would have thought, of all the things you've done... How did that happen?
I was making plans to return to Australia. I'd worked with Cliff Richard as a backup singer for eight weeks at the London Palladium, eight shows a week, and he gave me £100 a week, and that was a lot of money to me in late 74.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a call out of the blue from Glenn Wheatley and B. Birdles. Glenn said... you know, I got B. Birdles. I said, oh, yeah, I remember B. from the Zoo. And a guy called Graham Goel and the drummer. They were remnants of a band called Mississippi. Yeah, I think I've heard of them. I hadn't, really, because I've been in England for 4 years, 5 years. And he said, anyway, they want to talk to you about forming a band. I said, oh, no, I'm not going to get any more bands, Glenn. I'm going home to Australia. I'm going to be a manager again or something. He said, no, well, come around and hear these guys and listen to their songs and bring some of your own. And we just met and sang these songs in easy harmony. And I went, oh, you know, here's the last chance here, boy. You better take this. And
Little River Band was formed.
Yeah, I named it because I didn't like Mississippi. I thought, you know, why should we call an Australian band be called Mississippi?
It's named after a sign that's on the...
Yeah, so it's a tiny little town outside of Geelong in Victoria. And I passed the sign saying, Little River Exit, 1 mile. And I said to the guys, that sounds like a title for a song. And then in the same breath, or a band, Little River Band. And they all went, nah. we couldn't come up with anything else and it stuck.
Glenn Shorrock is my guest, folks. We need to take a break. There's lots of drama still to come, and we're going to run out of time. Welcome back to Conversations. Glenn Shorrock is my guest, and what a life he's led in the music industry. But you've just formed Little River Band. We've got so much to do. And
in 1975.
Could you have anticipated the success of that band, not just here in Australia, but particularly in America? You're big in America.
I had a feeling about it. You know, we'd all had... track records under our belt, experience, Glenn Wheatley in the management situation, Beebe and Graham, Zoot in Mississippi, me with the Twilight's Axiom. So there was we weren't new kids on the block, but the main thing about between it was we'd written about 80 songs, 80 good songs, some of them very good songs. And
what was your favourite?
I thought A Long Way There, It's a Long Way There, which was our first single in America. I thought that was a very grown-up sort of pop song. Graham is a terrific writer, you know, he's a crafter of great songs.
As I understand, quite a perfectionist in terms of making you rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. And that didn't go down that well with you.
You're saying that instead of this.
What?
Shut up, Graham. Out of my way. Now, we had chemistry right from the beginning, he and I. You know, he wanted to put all the dots on the I's and the crosses on the T's. You know, we spent hours on one song, and I just said, come on, we've got to get a repertoire together. Let's learn another song. Oh, no, but this one's not quite right. Bugger it, it's good enough. Let's go. I was told in those certain terms that that's the way they worked, and if you don't like it, you can get out. So I stayed.
And cut a sway through America, too, I understand. But
yeah.
But then you say they sacked you.
Well, you know, this, we're talking, what, 7 years down the track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd had 7 years together. We'd done what we you know we did with the help of Glenn Wheatley. We sold our songs all around the world, and we had, I think, 8 top 20 records in a row, which has never been done by many groups, really.
Mm.
And we got as far as number 3. You know, we had about 4 or 5 top 10s, sold 20, 25, 30 million albums, toured for 7 years, probably played, oh, you know, 1,000 gigs.
Do the riches flow from a successful band like that?
And well, especially when you got nothing.
You had
no,
nothing?
Really, I didn't have anything, no.
Even with the songs from the Twilights? And
no. No, I had those songs.
Yeah.
From that time I was talking about in those early Cliff Richard times, you know, I was writing songs, but I had no real place to put them until LIB came along. So,
and I suppose you still get royalties from those, do you?
Yeah, I get a good slice. I mean, over the years it dwindles, but you know we recorded on vinyl, and then all of a sudden CDs came out, so they were reissued. So these songs keep getting a refreshment course, and so the royalty level keeps a reasonable level.
How did they tell you were sacked? And what reason did they give?
That my commitment to the band was not enough, and they felt different to what I did, that we should take a year off and regenerate, spend the money, you know, settle, get our lives in order personally, and write some more tunes as good as what we started with, because I thought our songwriting was getting a little weak. And that was borne out because when Farnham joined, I mean, they had...
How'd you feel?
I felt shit out. I hated it. You know, I've carried that with me for years. I got blind drunk with Brian.
Brian Cadd?
Yeah. Poured it all out of him.
Did that solve anything?
No, it just got it out of my system, I think. And then, of course, I did the stupid thing and say, well, bugger him, I'm going to do my solo album. And I recorded Villain of the Peace, which in my mind was a good enough album coming off the back of LIB, but I didn't really give it enough time to gestate, and I put it out there very quickly, thinking I don't need these guys. But, you know, we had the chemistry, but the chemistry sort of ran out after a while.
Because it ended badly, because you've got a group running around in America calling themselves Little River Band.
That's another.
You've got different variations of it.
Yeah, I call it the ghost of LIB now, because there's so many incarnations of that band, and now there's one, you know, without much real spirit in it, I don't think.
Can you get together as old friends? And
no,
you can't. It's done.
No, it's done, pretty much. We've tried to reform, you know, we tried to get our name back. We tried to do the comeback album as Bertel Shorrock Goebel. That sounded too much like a bunch of bankers and or wankers. And so I think time's moved on now. And I'm enjoying myself too much now, mate. I'm you know, I've got the songs under my belt. I'm the guy that sang them.
And you're 74, as you
know. I'm 74. I'm 74 next. I'm only 73 now, as we speak.
Going on 74. And still doing it, still performing it.
Yeah.
Is that because...
It's my job.
You have to do it?
No, it's my job.
Because
it's
you
what
want
I do.
To do it.
That's what I do. I entertain people. We all give service in some way or another, I think. Even a plumber gives good service, if he's a good plumber. You know what I'm saying? You know,
you're a good entertainer.
I'm a good entertainer, and that was my chosen path, and I'm pretty good at it. Pretty good at it.
Has it cost you in other aspects of your life, your private life, your personal life? Is it?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well,
I think I'm pretty okay.
Married twice?
Yeah, what's that matter?
No, I'm just saying. Is that
No, it's all right.
I just want to... Okay. If I am prying, tell me.
Yeah, I'll tell you to shut up. No, I'm not perfect. I've got my weaknesses, and, you know, maybe I do shoot my mouth off a bit too much, and that was one of the reasons why I was edged out of or voted out of Little River Band. They just thought I was too... how to be put it? We're a serious band, Glenn. I think that's one of his quotes. Well, are we? I said, well, I'm an entertainer, and I do it the way I see it. And he said, yeah, but we want someone that's going to take this band further. Who? John Farnham. Oh, okay. Well, off you pop. Well, that didn't work, did it, really?
Didn't last that long.
Had a couple of good songs, I think, and John fell out with those guys anyway.
You have come back together as the Twilights, and you've performed with the symphony orchestras and the like. Those sort of projects, are they satisfying?
Oh yeah, I love coming back and working with the old buggers. I've said it many times, they're my favourite band with the Twilights. They always will be, because it's my first band, huh? We were mates. We were close friends, and we became a good act, a good band. I springboarded myself off of that. Axiom had its success briefly. I learnt more about that by songwriting, staying in England. That songwriting time in England stood me in great stead with the LRB success and still continues now. You know, I've got a great body of work behind me.
And you live in Sydney, do you?
Yeah, I've been in Sydney now since 1980. What's that, 38 years? Yeah. Yes. It's a long time. I mean, really, I still think of myself as an Adelaide man. But I only spent 10, 11 years of my life here. But they were my teenage years.
Yeah, we came.
And my early 20s, you know, my... 2021.
So you have got a nostalgic attachment to the city.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was a teenager, man, and the whole thing was happening, and there I was in my little red sports car up and down the main North Road, parked up in the Adelaide Hills, snogging. It was lovely.
Have you got children?
Pardon?
You children?
Children?
Kids. Yeah, tell us about your kids.
Where are they? Don't bring them up now. I only said snogging. I haven't had any kids, unfortunately. We haven't had the luck of that. Our wife and I have been together 42 years now.
Wow. Joe.
No kids, but we've got lots of surrogates.
Deserve a medal.
Yes, she does. Deserve a medal. But no, she's been great support to me. Really good.
You are a legend without a doubt. Particularly here in Adelaide, because we claim you're
a legend without a cause.
No, without a doubt.
It's rebel without a cause.
You're performing at the German Club on the 22nd of February and the 23rd of February. The 22nd is sold out. What do you perform? What?
Well, we've termed the show Conversations in a way, loosely. My life in music, pictures, and
conversation. Work. Do you actually chat with the audience?
Yeah, yeah. John Pemberton is going to join me and moderate a bit of a Q&A, and we'll have a chat on stage with the audience as well.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Graham.
Good luck on the 22nd is sold out. I'm sure the 23rd will be sold out as well. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the club and seeing some old friends again and touching bases with yourself and, as I say, old friends that I grew up with.
Glenn Sharrock, my guest, folks. Thanks for joining us.
In times like these, it has never been more important to have a solid financial plan, one that can help you weather any storm and reach your future goals. That's why talking to a certified financial planner professional makes a lot of sense. No one is better qualified to provide you with financial guidance based on your personal circumstances. It's certain advice during uncertain times. To start building your financial plan, visit fpa.com.au/askacfp.